The following podcast contains advertising. To access an ad-free version of the Lawfare podcast, become a material supporter of Lawfare at patreon.com/lawfare. That's patreon.com/lawfare. Also, check out Lawfare's other podcast offerings, Rational Security, Chatter, Lawfare No Bull, and The Aftermath.
Life is full of awesome what ifs, and some not so much, like unexpected medical costs. That's why United Healthcare provides Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans to supplement your primary plan and help manage out of pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
I'm Benjamin Wittes, and this is the Lawfare Podcast Special Edition, January 25th, 2018. The New York Times this evening broke a remarkable story. Reporters Maggie Haberman and Mike Schmidt report that Donald Trump back in June decided to fire special counsel Bob Mueller and ordered him fired, only to be pushed back upon by his White House counsel Don McGahn, who threatened to resign rather than carry out the order. This prompted Trump to back down. And Bob Mueller is today still the special counsel in the Russia matter. We are joined by Jack Goldsmith, Bob Bauer, Carrie Cordero, Steve Vladek. Let's dive into it right away. Steve, get us started. What are your reactions to this story?
I mean, I guess my initial reaction to the story is that the only thing I find surprising about it is how unsurprising it really is. I mean, I think, you know, we had all, I suspect, thought for a while that this was certainly something that was at least discussed in the White House. And given what we know about the president's, tendency to react aggressively to developments he doesn't like, you know, I don't think it's hard to imagine that there was a point along the way where the thought occurred to him. I think the only part of the story that maybe was, if not unexpected, at least not obvious from prior reporting, is the role of the White House counsel, Don McGahn, in apparently preventing this from happening by effectively threatening to resign unless the president backed down. You know, I think whatever one thinks of McGahn and his overall job as White House counsel, you know, it's a pretty important moment for someone like him to do that. And I think it just shows how important he is to the president that, at least in this case, it worked. So, you know, for starters, my gut reaction is, you know, I'm shocked that there's gambling going on in this establishment. And I guess the real question to me is, you know, what do we, and perhaps more importantly, what do the relevant members of Congress do with this news? How do they react?
Jack, you, when I texted you to ask you whether you wanted to join this conference call, you responded amazing about the news. Do you disagree with Steve that it's entirely predictable and unsurprising?
So I didn't say what was amazing. and I kind of agree with Steve. The amazing thing here, we don't really know from the story exactly how firm Trump was in sending McGahn to try to tell Rosenstein to fire Mueller. The most important element of the story by far is what McGahn did, because if a loyalist like McGahn, and by loyalist I mean someone who's really gone, at least early in the administration, to some extremes to accommodate the president, and in my opinion wasn't giving him great legal advice early on, as I've written, but if McGahn has reached the judgment that the president would be a disaster for the president to fire Mueller, and if McGahn is refusing to do so and threatening to resign, that is really different than someone like Rosenstein basically implying that in his testimony. And I think the news of this story is that the president is not going to be able to fire Mueller, because if you've got McGahn standing up and you've got Rosenstein in Congress testifying that he doesn't think there's any cause for firing Mueller, what this basically indicates is the president will not be able to convince his senior subordinates to carry this out. So the president's going to have to face a lot of resignations to make this happen, and he didn't want to do that here, and I don't see how he could do it in the future. I mean, it's not impossible. Trump is so mercurial, he could do anything. But I think the real news is here that is that the hurdles to him doing so have now gone to the highest levels in the White House.
Bob, you've been a White House counsel, albeit in circumstances less trying than this, I think. I'm interested particularly in your evaluation of the part of the story that deals with Don McGahn and how he conducted himself in this episode.
I see McGahn, frankly, doing what a White House counsel, I think, frankly, any counsel in a politically charged situation like this would do, and that is first to evaluate the merits of the president's belief that Mueller was disqualified and should be dismissed. And then secondly, to move to the political and broader consequences of a move to dismiss him. In the first instance, he plainly, the Times reporting is that he didn't find the reasons the president gave compelling, adequate reasons to seek the dismissal. And I certainly agree, based on what was set out in the Times, that there's some genuinely peculiar features to the president's reasoning. Had the president insisted, then McGahn would have been compelled to point out to him that however strongly the president felt about it, he was buying himself a world of trouble by seeking to dismiss Mueller, that in the end, he would lose more than he gained. And then when the president insisted further, according to the Times report, he said he couldn't deliver the order that the president wanted. So I think those steps, the analysis on the legal side, coupled then with sort of a judgment on the political consequences, followed then by the indication that he believed so strongly the president was wrong that he couldn't deliver the order, is the sequence of analysis that I think you would expect him to follow, or any other White House counsel in his position.
So you look at this as an example of basically the White House counsel doing his job.
I do. I mean, based on the Times report, again, there may be, you know, aspects of the story that haven't been reported, details we don't know about, but based on how it was laid out, I certainly could imagine a White House counsel saying, no, I really can't seek his dismissal on the grounds that he was unhappy with a fee increase at a golf club and resigned his membership. And if you try to fire him for that reason or the other two reasons that you give, you won't be on solid ground, and the politics ultimately will be very damaging to you. I certainly do not find that to be at all different from what I would expect a White House counsel to advise on the facts reported in the Times piece.
Carrie, one of the things that struck me about this story was just how out of control Donald Trump seemed. This is a month or so after he's fired the FBI director, and he's railing about conspiracy theories involving conflicts of interest because of a golf club golf membership dispute, and he wants to fire the special counsel over this. How do you evaluate, you know, the president in this, and you know, more broadly, what was your sort of takeaway from the story?
Well, so on your first question, I think what it shows is that he might be the president, but he still is just Donald Trump. And you and I have been talking for a year and a half now about the fact that he just doesn't understand how the Justice Department works. He doesn't understand how independent, apolitical law enforcement works. He doesn't respect it, and my takeaway from the past year is that he hasn't evolved in his understanding of how the Justice Department works, how investigations need to be independent, how they need to be apolitical. And so some of the colorful aspects of the article that came out tonight with respect to him thinking that these various issues with respect to the golf course and different things like that, that those would potentially conflict Mueller out, I think those just show his ignorance, frankly, about the types of issues that would conflict him out. And it shows that he simply doesn't respect these investigations, and he wants them shut down. He wanted them shut down. That's why he fired FBI Director Comey. A month later, there was still tremendous attention on the firing of the FBI director. And so the fact that this consideration, as it's being reported tonight, came so quickly, just within a month of firing the FBI director, that he immediately was considering removing Mueller, I think, number one, shows that the pattern of obstruction is a strong case, because this is yet another indicator of his intent to derail the investigation. And two, in terms of a bigger picture, why is he so scared of this investigation?
So one of the, I'm not sure who to direct this question to, but whoever has thoughts on it, one of the most interesting aspects of the story to me is it shows how relatively effective Ty Cobb has been in managing his client, which is to say, he's taken Trump from a period in which he's so out of control that he gives an order to fire the special counsel, to an environment in which they are, you know, very actively cooperating, turning over everything the special counsel requests. And he does seem to have convinced the president that, you know, the easiest way to make this go away is just to give Mueller everything he wants, and then, you know, he'll wrap it up and clear you. And I'm curious whether from your all's perspective that looks like good lawyering, or whether that looks like deluding the client and sort of lulling him into this state of cooperation that's then gonna come back and bite him in the butt.
I can't say. Sometimes it could be a question of chemistry, his willingness, for example, to listen to the older lawyer than to the younger lawyer, to the lawyer with the white-collar criminal experience, not to the lawyer with the more narrowly political background whom he got to know during the campaign. It may have to do then just with the credibility of the messenger. It could also be that as time passed, Cobb was able to bring to the president's attention in more detail than McGahn at the time, the reasons why, he had reason to believe that if the president held firm, the outcome would be acceptable, and B, based on other developments, the reasons why the decision would backfire on the president. So those could all be reasons why Cobb was successful, whereas in that moment, McGahn was not. There's also the possibility that in the McGahn case, the president was throwing something of a tantrum. I don't know during what period of time all that took place, whether he, you know, whether that was a confrontation that played out in 3 hours or a confrontation that played out over a month. So that may also influence precisely how that kind of an exchange would have gone.
So my gut reaction here has two elements to it. The first is, I think the answer to your question depends to a large degree on what Cobb actually thinks his client's potential culpability is. And so if Cobb is convinced beyond all shadow of a doubt that, there's no there, then I think that makes sense. And I think sort of, you know, avoiding unnecessary scandal and allowing the investigation to run its course and doing whatever is necessary to bring that about is, you know, the strategy that I hope any lawyer in that context would pursue. But if he has different views, then I'm not so sure that makes sense. And then the second piece of it is, there's the question of where this report is coming from and of who Maggie and Mike's sources were for getting the story out. You know, color me as someone who very much doubts that it's anyone in Mueller's camp.
I think we can say very confidently that it's not that.
Right. And so I think there's at least a non-frivolous possibility that the story is actually coming from Cobb or one of the president's lawyers themselves. It wouldn't be the first time.
What do you guys think? Is this a story about skillful management of the president by first McGahn and then Ty Cobb, get him in a different posture with regard to the investigation, or is this just taking a fiery explosion from Trump and deferring it a few months by deluding the client?
This is Jack. I agree with Steve. There's really no way to know because we don't know what Trump's culpability is. But both McGahn and Cobb basically in the story said that it would be a disaster for the president to fire Mueller. And that must mean that they believe that the consequences of firing him are worse for him and his presidency. That both men believe, and it seems obvious, that especially since I don't think he can derail this, there's no way I believe that he can't derail this investigation. He can fire Mueller, but I don't think he can derail the investigation. So they both have concluded, and it seems obvious based on what we know,
that it's going to get worse for Trump if he fires Mueller, not better, under any set of circumstances. And especially if he's either innocent of any crime or not dead to rights on a crime, it would be not in his interest to go and inflame the situation. And yes, it would delay the investigation, but it wouldn't stop the investigation to fire Mueller. So, you know, the fact that both men have now concluded that it would be worse for the president to fire Mueller is maybe some indication of their take on his relative culpability here.
But Ben, just to push back on the premise of your question a little bit, I don't think we can say, and I'm curious what others think, I don't think we can say that threatening resignation is a demonstration of skillful management of the client. I mean, maybe the what we're observing about Ty Cobb sort of saying that the ball keeps moving a little bit down the field is client management of a difficult client. But I don't think we can evaluate from a lawyering perspective McGahn, the White House counsel, having to threaten to resign. And let's not forget, this news is coming just a few days after we learned through other reporting that Trump's appointee of FBI Director Chris Wray has also threatened to resign. So those are two extraordinarily significant positions, both of whom are not so much as managing the president, but having to pull out their most important card that they have, which is if he takes a certain action, or in Ray's case, if pressure continues, they are going to resign their positions.
So that's a useful corrective, Carrie, but I'm curious how you evaluate Ty Cobb in that, because I mean, it does seem that the president is a little bit less tempestuous today with respect to the special counsel than he was in June. He's not threatening to fire him. He's promising cooperation. He's saying he looks forward to, he'd love to sit down and talk to him. And they've turned over a whole lot of documents. And so, you know, your point about McGahn is well taken, but I'm curious, how should we understand? I forget who tweeted the other day that Ty Cobb had emerged from the White House, seen his shadow, and that gone back in, and that means there were six more weeks of the Mueller investigation. You know, like, should we understand this as a kind of, sort of crazy exercise in deferring bad stuff, or is Ty Cobb onto something here?
Well, from my perspective, I do think Ty Cobb's public messaging has had a somewhat calming effect. In other words, there continue to be reports that appear to be coming from him, whether they're attributed to him or not. They seem to be coming, sort of all these reports about the investigations coming to a close and wanting to cooperate and all these sorts of things. Sometimes they identify him as source, sometimes they don't, and it looks like it's him or people close to him from the sourcing. But so I think he has been successful in that. But my point was simply to draw the distinction between, I don't think we can equate the role that he's had with what McGahn apparently had to do last June.
Fair enough. So I am interested in returning to a point that Jack made earlier, that we actually can't. The takeaway from this story is that Trump can't fire Mueller. I think most people who read this story tonight are not going to look at an actual effort from June of the president to fire Mueller and say that shows that he can't do it. They're going to look at it and say how dangerous he tried to do it. That means our fears of it are justified. So I'm interested in the sort of tension here between Jack's analysis and what I suspect will be the conventional wisdom. Steve, what do you think? Is this a situation where the conventional wisdom has something to say for it, or is Jack seeing through the optics to a more important reality of the dynamic?
The short answer, Ben, is I don't know. And I think what's going to be really interesting to see over the next 24 to 48 hours is how Republicans in Congress, especially key members of the leadership and committee chairs, react to this. I mean, I think, you know, folks are pretty well aware that there are pending bills in both the House and the Senate that would actually make it harder for the special counsel to be fired, or at least would provide for judicial review in a case in which the government tries, you know, the president through the deputy attorney general tries to fire him. I think this is a really interesting moment for the Republicans, including Senator Lindsey Graham, Senator Tom Tillis, who have put their names on these bills, to see whether they're going to say this is proof that we need this legislation, or to see if, you know, they think they come out and sort of echo Jack and say, no, this is proof that, you know, the president has enough folks around him who are going to keep him from acting inappropriately. And, you know, I think that could be a very important bellwether, not only of the likelihood that the president might try this again, but of whether, you know, if he does, there's going to be legislation in place that actually would allow Mueller to go into court and to challenge it. And I think that's where these bills come from. And I think it puts, you know, it puts someone like Lindsey Graham in a very interesting position.
And has just bring us up to date on those legislative proposals. My impression is that Senators Tillis and Graham, who pushed those proposals earlier on, have been sort of awfully quiet about them more recently. Is that right?
Yeah, I mean, the Senate Judiciary Committee had a hearing on the bills in September, at which I was one of the witnesses. There were two witnesses testifying in favor and two against. You know, I think the hearing, whatever one thinks of, you know, sort of which side is more convincing. I mean, I think the hearing suggested some salutary changes to both bills that actually would allow them to be reconciled. And my sense is that the sort of the staffs were quietly working on harmonizing the different bills, so there could be one proposal. But yeah, Ben, there's been no movement. There's been no noise from any of the Republicans, at least on the Senate side, to get this legislation out of the Judiciary Committee. And so I think, you know, one of the real interesting questions for me is whether the Time story, you know, rekindles the sort of pressure on Republicans like Graham, like Tillis, and ultimately on someone like Chuck Grassley to get this legislation moving along, to get it out of committee, or whether, in fact, you know, there's sort of a more concerted pushback that this has the opposite effect because folks have a similar reaction to Jack.
So, Jack, this story comes out amidst a flurry of other stories about both the state of the investigation, but also about the Nunes memo and related machinations. And I'm curious about your thoughts on the interaction between these various streams. So, at the same time as the president himself has, under Ty Cobb's tutelage, become relatively under control about the Mueller investigation, you have Chairman Nunes in the House, who seems pretty out of control on the subject. And, you know, is there a relationship between between this set of stories and what's going on in the House, or are these just completely different strains of craziness?
I think that they can be related in the following way, and that's like this. It is not surprising. I think Steve said this at the outset. It is not remotely surprising to me that Donald Trump would wake up every morning and say, "I want to fire Mueller," with various degrees of seriousness. He, for a long time, made it very clear that he wanted to do that. And that's why, if you recall, several times last year, there was a big rush of concern that he was on the verge of firing Mueller. We've known that the president was wanting to do that since basically Mueller was appointed. What we don't know in trying to assess how much the government itself will keep the president in check in terms of not firing Mueller or in terms of keeping the investigation going, is what would the reaction inside the executive branch be to that possibility, and what would Congress do? And I think that we're starting to get more information about both of those things, and that's how they relate. To go back to what I said earlier, I think that the really significant aspect of this story is
that there are more senior people, not just in the Justice Department, but also in the White House. McGahn, who was at least early on in the administration, was not, according to reports, standing up much to the president. If McGahn is going to the mat on this, that's an indication, I do think, that within the executive branch, it's going to be very hard for the president to get the support to fire Mueller. What Nunes is doing, and with the bits of support he's getting, especially on the House side for that, is to try to discredit the FBI, to try to discredit the investigation. I think it's an irresponsible effort based on everything I've seen, but there's no doubt that from the baseline of a year ago, there is last August, that there's less fervent support across the House, across the Congress, especially in the House, for the Mueller investigation. So I think those two stories together give us some indication about where the congressional Republican support is and where the White House support is. I still believe, and I can't prove this, and there's certainly some evidence to the contrary, I still think that it would be, if the president were able to overcome the hurdles in the executive branch to get Mueller fired, I think, which I don't think he can do, I think it would be a disaster for him in Congress. And I think, and this is what McGahn was, this is basically the advice McGahn gave. So I guess I would say in sum that we have more information now than 6 or 7 months ago about how both Congress and the White House counsel and people like that would respond. And ultimately, and this is the important point, we've seen this and we've learned this in the last 15 months. Ultimately, the way that the checks and balances work in this context, in the context of constraining a president who's prone to lawlessness, who's prone to violate norms, who doesn't like independence, who's attacking his administration left and right, ultimately the check on that is the check of people in the executive branch who are going to stand up to the president and cause him more pain than he's willing to take, and or people that are willing to step up in Congress. So we've learned about both of those dimensions.
So on a scale of 1 to 10, where 1 is completely confident, or completely unconfident, and in living in terror, and 10 is complete confidence, how confident are you that Mueller will not be removed?
I'm sorry, I didn't get the numbers. Could you tell me that again?
So 1 is no confidence at all. You're really worried about it, and 10 is completely confident. So how confident are you that Mueller will not be removed but will remain in place?
So I'm very hesitant to make predictions about the mercurial Donald Trump. First of all, I'm not worried, and I'm fairly confident that Mueller will not be fired. Up until the point where, you know, if he's basically issuing indictments or recommending impeachment or something like that and is accusing the president of crimes and the president has nothing to lose and just wants to blow the whole thing up, maybe. But up till that point, in the midst of the investigation, I'm pretty confident that he's going to stay.
Carrie, what about you? 1 to 10 scale, how confident are you Mueller stays in place?
I'm on the higher end. I mean, it's hard to put a number, but somewhere above 5, but less than 10 that the president will perhaps not fire the special counsel. What I perhaps think is a little bit more likely as time goes on, if we accept the premise that the special counsel's office is not wrapping up anytime soon and that they have a lot of work still to do, I do wonder about how long the deputy attorney general will stay in that position, whether he is also in it for the long haul or whether the president might go at things in a different way to try to change the management of the special counsel, or try to sort of go at it in a little bit different way as opposed to just the upfront firing. I also think that the Nunes antics have been really damaging, and that's probably a conversation for another podcast. But the level to which he has brought discredit on that committee, and the way that he has been able to turn so many Republican members of Congress against the FBI against the Justice Department is just bizarre. And until he is no longer in that position, it will take a long time, I think, for that committee to recover to a functioning body.
I agree very much with that. Steve, what's your confidence level on Mueller?
Oh, man. About the same as my confidence level in the Mets winning the National League East this coming season, which is to say low. You know, I want
to... we've isolated a point of real disagreement here.
Well, I want to agree with Jack, and I want to agree with Carrie, and I want to think that, you know, these mechanisms are going to put pressure on the president to not, you know, to not take the plunge. But I also believe that Mueller's not done, and that as the news out of his camp gets, as I suspect it will, bleaker and bleaker for and closer to the president, you know, I just think there's going to come a point where the president says, to hell with it. And, you know, I think, again, I mean, not to beat a dead horse, but I think the question is going to be, where is his support in Congress if and when that time comes? You know, I wrote a piece for The Washington Post at the end of October that made me absolutely zero friends, suggesting that if the president wanted to fire Mueller, his window was quickly closing.
I believe, Steve, that you will back me up, that I sent you a note that said I really agree with that piece.
Which only proves the point, right, Ben? but what I said, and, you know, the basic gist of the post was that the further along the Mueller investigation gets, the closer it gets to the president, and the closer we get to the 2018 midterms, the harder it's going to be for Republicans in Congress to support the president and to not sort of push back aggressively if he moves against Mueller. I still think that's true, but I also think this is an unpredictable precedent. And so, you know, to me, the real question is, in answering whether on a scale of 1 to 10 how secure I think Mueller is, you know, is Congress going to get off of its rear end and pass one of these bills that makes it harder for the president to remove him without cause? You know, obviously, if the answer is yes, then I'm quite secure in Mueller's future. But if the answer is no, you know, I'm very uncomfortable having any faith in this president to do the right thing.
Steve, that's not going to happen. It would have to override a presidential veto. It's just not going to happen.
So I'm not sure about that, Jack. I mean, I think, you know, if the bill gets out of the House and the Senate with decent Republican support, where, you know, it's even where it's not obvious that they wouldn't have the votes to sustain an override. You know, it might be like the Russia sanctions bill, where the president just, you know, where vetoing the thing would actually be a lot worse than signing it.
Maybe, but if that's the dynamic, then that just means if the president's not going to stand up to an attempt to give Mueller more independence, that just means the president's not going to fire Mueller, I think. I mean, either way you go, it's just going to be hard for him.
But I think that's very context specific about where we are if and when that happens. And so, to me, one of the real sort of litmus tests for the next couple of days is whether we see anyone on the Hill with an R next to their name, you know, referring back to these bills and trying to get them rolling again.
Yeah.
So, Bob, what are your big takeaways from this story?
It certainly seems that this leak, from wherever it came, doesn't help much as Ty Cobb prepares to negotiate the terms of a interview with the special counsel. That's a very awkward position for the lawyers to be in. I don't know that it would come as a tremendous surprise to Mueller, because the president has indicated he thinks the investigation is a hoax, and there have been other indications, for example, as noted in the story, that the president from time to time has wondered why it is that he has to live with Mueller. But all the same, I don't think the timing of this is exceptionally helpful. There's another piece to it, which is I do find something strikingly similar and in the end unhelpful to the president in the reasoning that he tried to pass off as the grounds for dismissing Mueller. I think they have the feel, certainly, the very thick feel of being very pretextual. It's hard to imagine for a moment that the president really believes those reasons were the ones that, you know, or that anybody else would believe they're the reasons that would really have moved the president to seek Mueller's dismissal. And so I'm reminded of the reasons that were originally given for the firing of Jim Comey, that the president was upset about Hillary Clinton's treatment at the hands of Jim Comey and Then, of course, it turned out he didn't care about that at all, as most anybody would have guessed. He had other reasons. And I don't think it helps in an investigation that's going to necessarily focus on intent for the president to once again, at least as reported in the Times, to be offering up sham excuses for the firing of the special counsel or for, in the earlier case, the firing of Jim Comey. I think that, frankly, whether in more direct ways or just as a matter of just coloring the judgment of this particular individual in the investigation, the president of the United States, I think it's exceedingly unhelpful to him.
We're going to leave it there. This has been a special edition of the Lawfare podcast. If you have not yet done your part to promote the Lawfare podcast by means of social media, by means of leaving us a rating on whatever podcast distribution service you use, please do so. The Lawfare podcast is, as always, produced in cooperation with our host institution, the Brookings Institution. And once again, thanks for listening.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.